mothers. All we need is one love.
All we need is one.
All we need is one love. One love for my sisters and my brothers. Fathers, we can help the single mothers. Mothers. All we need is one love.
All we need is, all we need is, all we need is one love.
Yeah. There it is.
Hey, Boston, you are in the Village with Willie P. We are WBCALP 102.9 FM, Boston Community Radio, and you are listening to One Love by the New Edition. I'm excited today to have an author in the house. You know, I play music a lot, but today we're going to talk to an author about his fantastic book. And he has taken his medical background and his Southern African, West African travels and created this fictional novel that takes you on this roller coaster ride with a backdrop of romance, riots, and malaria plagues and genetic editing. It gives you an insight into how far people will go for money and control. So let me talk to my guest today. Let me introduce you to C.L. Manning, and the name of his book is Rhodesian Doll Hunt. How are you? Welcome to my show.
Hi, William. C.L. Manning.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
So tell us a little bit background about your background and what point you decide to write this book, because I found this book fascinating.
Well, my original background was as a medical technologist. I went to Northeastern University, and I did that for 20 years in the Boston teaching hospitals, working in and running hospital laboratories at MIT and Beth Israel Deaconess and other places. Then I switched to healthcare IT. And during all that time, I did a lot of traveling, sometimes for a year or more. And I also worked in Sweden for a couple of years. And I just kept writing these journals. And they just kept piling up and piling up. And a lot of things happened. And I just decided to take a particular journal. I took 4 months out of that trip and summarized it into this book.
Nice. So tell us, what type of book is it? What genre would I, find this book in?
I think the closest thing, it's a thriller, travel adventure type of genre. There's some espionage in it. There's genetic espionage. But the main thing is probably travel adventure and thriller with some science dabbled in and a little bit of sex for the shallow masses.
You got to have love and romance, right?
No question.
There's no book without love and romance and all this things that are going on. So let's talk about the travel, some of the travel that you experienced that you put into this book that you thought would be interesting to your reader.
Well, there were a couple of different phases. The first part was in West Africa where we traveled, the main characters traveled and had some incredible experiences, largely exposed to Muslim culture in South Saharan Africa. We ate bush rat. We had
that tastes
boiled
good,
beer.
Right?
We had a lot of experiences. But the main thing that happened there was we did go to a research lab in Liberia, a research facility, where they were doing hepatitis research. And I thought that was an opportunity to develop my first lie of the book. So I took our experience meeting the people in that facility and decided to make one of them a bad guy.
Yes.
And eventually we learned how dark their hearts were.
Yes, yeah. We did. Power, money and power, always the driving force,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Let's talk about, because in the book you talk about malaria and being in, and I want to talk about some of the other things that you found. What did you find interesting about this travel? Because you actually did go to these places.
Oh, well, sure.
What was interesting that you found about these places, and one place in particular?
Well, certainly the most interesting, if not my favorite place, was South Africa and Rhodesia because of the strife there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were there at a time, this is 1979, and South Africa still had apartheid, and Rhodesia was trying to hold on to white minority rule with Ian Smith. So I remember getting off the plane in South Africa and going through the airport, and the first thing we saw were newspapers with maybe a quarter of the text blacked out. And that was their way. And every newspaper, oh, not every newspaper, but a lot of newspapers were like that, and magazines. And so somebody had to sit every day and go through every newspaper and black out the text of in order to censor what was being consumed.
Wall?
Yeah.
It's that wall.
And then, of course, there was the whites-only signs, the European-only signs, the colored-only signs that you would see on benches, in the courts, on the liquor stores, on the buses. It was quite striking because you read about it, you hear about it, but, you know, there was no internet in those days. So it was kind of something you put in the back of your mind.
Mm.
And to actually see it, I think I described in my book, it's like Thomas wanting to stick his finger into the wound. You know, to see it just has another level of impact.
Right. And when you talk about the atmosphere in these countries at that time when you were there, were you fearful, or was it any danger happening to people who were traveling during that time?
In West Africa, in Liberia, Upper Volta, Ivory Coast, I felt like a celebrity. And we were treated so well by the people there, whether it was helping us find a hotel or a place to stay, or give us a place to stay, or invite us into their hut to eat. They were just very gracious and spectacular people. I suspect that, you know, they don't have any tourists there, so, or they didn't at the time. So I think we were just a unique thing for them to, a unique people for them to show their grace to.
What was it, because of the lack of tourism and the money? Was it, you know, the money that was coming, that you were bringing in?
No, I don't know. I think it was just kindness.
Yeah.
Think that? No, I don't think it was the money at all.
Oh, okay.
No. They were just being kind to somebody who they knew was a foreigner.
Yeah. And what about the other part that you found that was disheartening?
Well, you know, we went down to South Africa and joined a tour that was going to travel from Johannesburg. It was actually traveling all the way to London, but we were just going from Johannesburg to Nairobi because you had to be in a vehicle in order to see the game parks, and that's the area of Africa that has the elephants and the hippos and the giraffes, etc. So we joined up with that tour, and that's when things started to happen. We went up to the border of Botswana at the Zambezi River. The ferry was blown up by Rhodesia. We ended up getting stranded there for 6 weeks.
Wow.
In a remote corner of Botswana. The company took the truck away from us, took the food away from us, and left us up there. So we were in a war zone, or on the edge of a war zone, and we're eating mealy meal and cabbage pretty much for 6 weeks. There were a few times where some locals came by and gave us some deer meat or something like that, but for the most part, we were eating mealy meal and cabbage. And mealy meal is the crushed up cassava.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that was dangerous.
I would say so.
And then, you know, we ended up traveling, trying to get out of there. And then they brought another ferry down. And as we were getting on that ferry, two helicopters came in and shot up that ferry.
Wow.
So we turned around and ran as fast as we could to get out of there.
Folks, this is real.
Yeah. So I had a lot of background in my journals that I fit into this fictional novel. So they were an inspiration. This also a lot of the genetic espionage part is largely fiction.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So when you, what are some of the other things that you learn or you talk about in your book? Let's talk about the genetic editing that you found in the, that you talk about in the book, and that gives that really other part of the espionage thrill. Because, you know, I have to shake my head because I think of all of these stories and movies that are about DNA testing and cloning of animals. And I know that this is not so far away. So I'm going to take a second and we'll come back and talk about that genetic editing situation.
Great.
The preceding commentary does not reflect the views of the staff and management of WBCA or the Boston Neighborhood Network. If you would like to express another opinion, you can address your comments to the Boston Neighborhood Network at 3025 Washington Street, Boston, Mass. 02119, attention WBCA LP 102.9 FM. If you would like to arrange a time for your own commentary, call WBCA at 617-708-3241 or email us at radio@bnntv.org.
You are listening to The Village with Willie P, and we are WBCA LP 102.9 FM, community radio. And I'm in the studio with my guest, Arthur. He's an author, first-time author,
yay!
C.L. Manning. And his book is called Rhodesian Doll Hunt. It's all about his journey, and he's somehow created this fictional scenery, a backdrop of all the things that he experienced while he was in Africa. And he put them in this book, and it takes you on this wonderful, wonderful ride. And we were talking about another part of the book that he included, which is real in the sense that it's happening. It's called genetic editing. And talk to us about what that means and what it looks like.
Sure. Genetic editing is actually a real thing right now. I put it into my book, which took place in 1979. One of my editors said, how could you do that? They didn't do genetic editing. But I have a way in my book that you'll see how it fits in. It is a way for scientists to take a string of DNA. DNA is simply a long string or double strand of four different nucleotides, A, T, C, and G, or adenine, thymine, cytosine, guanine. And they're just strung together. And the way that they're strung together defines the genes that you have. That is your genetic material. With a technique used today called CRISPR, C-R-I-S-P-R, they can take one of those nucleotides, one of those A, T, C, and Gs, find a specific one, cut it out, and replace it with another one. So an example would be cystic fibrosis. So cystic fibrosis, sickle cell, Tay-Sachs disease, these are diseases where just one single of those ATCGs has changed, it has mutated, or you inherited it. In those cases, you inherited it. And they can actually find the specific one, cut it out, and change it. Now, that's not being done today, right, but the technology is actually able to do it. Mm-hmm. And I do know that it has been done in China where they have taken embryos and injected, use this, it's called a Cas9 protein, to change their DNA so that they will be resistant to HIV.
Wow.
So there's good uses of it. And if you are interested in the details of the book, you'll see there can be some bad uses of it as well.
That makes a book interesting, right?
Yeah.
Because we know that the public, we know that no matter what good products are out there, like AI and all of this other, that bad people take it in and use it for bad, you know, for profit, I should say, for profit.
Yeah, but, or for power, as you said.
For power.
Yeah. Yes.
But yeah, let's talk about in the book. Let's talk about putting these things together in the book. What about the book that made it so urgent for you to have to write this book? What was the driving force for that?
Well, I started to... I was just transcribing my journal, and I thought that the stories were interesting enough to create a book out of it. Then I read it, and I realized it was just a travelogue. Mm-hmm. It wasn't really a story.
Mm-hmm.
So I injected the gene editing component of it and meeting these people in Liberia and having them ask us to carry something to South Africa that we thought was going to help cure malaria. So we did that, and that thing was a doll. Mm-hmm. And inside the doll was a genetic editing process that was going to be used to cure malaria. I won't go into the specifics of why it was a doll, but there was information built into the walls of this doll.
So
that's how it kind of started. And then as it went, I have had a first cousin who was on the FBI's top 10 most wanted list for many years. I think 9 years, but I'm not sure. I decided to inject him into the story. So he was a revolutionary, or some would even call him a terrorist, in the United States back in the late 70s and mid 80s. And I decided, well, I'm going to inject him. His ideology actually fit into the context of the book. So I had him become, and he ended up embedding himself into the Selous Scouts, which are the special ops forces of the Rhodesian Army. So during a large part of the book, the Rhodesian Army is fighting the group Joshua Nkrumah, ZAPU ZANU, these groups that are trying to end white rule in Rhodesia.
Wow. It was interesting because when I was reading the book, I thought of all, so you have these emotional, religious theories and people's beliefs. I love the fact that you added that in there as a character driven, because we do have our own opinion about the way we were brought up. And so all of that is entangled in the book. I thought it gave them real personality. Even though he was a bad guy, he thought he was doing something good, you know. And it's all based on how you grow up and in your religion and what your beliefs are. And even though you see this going on in Rhodesia and the apartheid going on, you still have your own opinion about what's going on. So talk about, because I know we have authors out there, what would you say to them about doing this, putting their book together? What was the most difficult part for you?
I think writing the book was actually pretty easy for me, but I was concerned about having it actually read by a professional.
Yeah.
That was the scariest part. to head that off, I think the best thing I did was to get beta readers to read the book. So beta readers are people that they should not know you. They have to be friends of friends of because if they know you, they are not going to give you their opinion.
Say that again, because people don't know how important that is. Say that again.
Don't give the book to your mother. Your mother, your brother, your friend, they're not going to give you an honest opinion. So I got feedback from beta readers. That was great. Then I got a developmental editor. I did have a couple of editors tell me, you don't need a developmental editor. And I just thought, I've never written anything before. So he was very helpful. He was called the novel doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And he helped me take out, he helped me with the pacing mm-hmm. of the book
mm-hmm.
and told me where it lagged and told me, you need to build up this love story more. You need to build up the racial component a little bit more and make that interesting. So that's what I did was to kind of fine tune it, was to get a developmental editor after having feedback from beta readers.
Mm-hmm. And what else? Talk about some things you learn in the journey that you would advise people who are doing this, you would encourage them to do.
Yeah, if you're like me and you have a science background and maybe you've written things, but you haven't written, a fictional component of it.
Something that you would encourage people to do, because we got like maybe about 3 more minutes.
Okay. I think one thing I did was I took some master classes, listened to some authors and read on about writing. And I started to learn things like, don't use so many adjectives. Don't use so many adverbs. You know, you never say the person was sad. You say their face drooped to the right. You know, you say the smile went up to their earlobe. And that was one of the times I went through the book that really kind of pulled a lot of the things together. And I learned to write better as a result of just researching and finding things. Then I started to notice what other people did and read other people's books in a different way than I did before.
Yes, yes. Now, where can we find your book?
Sure. For more information, my website is clmanning.com.
All right. And your book can be found on Amazon.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Is there anything else you would like to say to the listening audience about your travel, about you, about your book?
No, I just think it's been a great transformation for me to get involved with writing groups, groups online, groups in person, to meet people like yourself, to just educate myself in the whole business and process. And I chose to take the long route. I tried to get an agent, and I've learned that it's all about social media now. How many followers do you have? How many Instagram followers? So it's very difficult to get an agent for a new author, but it's possible. You know, you have to do a pitch and sell your story. So
and selling your story is selling yourself.
Yes, it is. Absolutely. And that can be hard to do.
Yes.
We're not all built for that. and it's something I need to get more adept at and taking a shot at it.
Yes, yes. Thank you. Thank you for coming on. I hope this was enjoyable for you. I love the book, and enjoy the venture of the ride.
Well, thank you for this opportunity, and I appreciate all that you do throughout the community and with the Writers Union and meeting people and encouraging authors like myself to go forward and try to be successful.
Thank you. Thank you, author C.L. Manning, and his book is Rhodesian Doll Hunt. Definitely. Thank you for coming on the show. And you have been in the village with Willie P. WBCALP. 102.9 FM, Boston Community Radio. And it's that time again. You know how we do. You know how we do. This is Sunday Morning with Wally Ali. It's good to help someone just because it's the right thing to do. It's good to honor someone that makes an impact in your life or the life of others. The village helps to redefine the things that it treats you unkind. It takes a village to make a difference. I say we are WBC LP 102.9 FM Boston. And we will see you next time in the village. See ya.